Chief Justice, may it please the Court, Richard Zappa for the Barrow family, who are the plaintiffs below in their appeal of a verdict for the defendant below, Dr. Abramowitz, and the radiology group which employed him at the time of the alleged negligence. I will be reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal. In this case, the Barrows allege that Dr. Abramowitz, a radiologist, was negligent in interpreting and reporting on chest x-rays which were done November 19, 2001, which indicated abnormalities in the left upper lobe, which, according to the plaintiffs, were cancerous. As a result of the failure to interpret those abnormalities as cancerous and report that a CT scan should be done in follow-up, Mr. Barrow's early-stage resectable tumor advanced to a point of end-stage metastatic cancer by the summer of 2002. By the time of diagnosis, the cancer was not treatable or curable by resection, and Mr. Barrow eventually died about 8 or 9 months later.
How much time elapsed between the initial examination by Dr. Abramowitz and the definitive diagnosis?
The initial diagnosis was probably about 5.5 or 6 months, but realistically, the workup led to a diagnosis in July of 2002, so anywhere from about 5.5 to 7 months. The Barrows appeal challenges two rulings of the trial court. First, the Barrows contend that they were deprived of full and fair opportunity to present important evidence which had a direct bearing on the most important causation issue in the case, and that was whether the abnormalities in the left upper lobe of Mr. Barrow's chest radiographs and subsequent chest CT scan, which was done in July of 2002, were indeed cancerous. An issue which was resolved against the Barrow family when the jury came back and found that although Dr. Abramowitz was negligent, his negligence was not a proximate cause of injury or harm. The trial court ruling, which the Barrows contend was an abuse of discretion, was the refusal of the trial court to permit the plaintiffs to introduce the deposition testimony of Dr. Stephen Krasnow, one of two medical oncologists designated by Dr. Abramowitz as trial experts. His opinion, expressed prior to trial in his report and at his deposition, was that after reviewing the various radiographs and all other tests in connection with Mr. Barrow's cancer, he concluded that the radiographic abnormalities were indeed cancerous.
Let me stop you because I'm a little bit confused. The jury found that Dr. Abramowitz was negligent.
That is correct.
Doesn't that mean that the jury said, yes, you missed a cancerous spot on this film? You know, you should have seen it and you should have known that it was cancer, right?
I would love to answer that question, yes, but I think I would not be. I think that is one inference one can draw from the jury's inconsistent verdict, if that's what Your Honor is leading to.
I'm just confused at this point. I'm not trying to get to somewhere. I'm just trying to get cleared up on this. If I understand your client's claim, it was that this man had lung cancer. The original x-ray showed it. If it had been identified at the time of the original x-ray, it was at an early enough stage and not metastasized and so on that it could have been treated in a way that would have led to a successful outcome or a more successful outcome, that it would have made a difference. And one issue would be, okay, did that first film show something or didn't it? Was it negligence not to have noticed that that was a cancerous spot? If the answer to that is yes, that is negligence, then the next question has to be, okay, but did that cause the injury or didn't it matter? In other words, if you've got lung cancer, you've got lung cancer, and it doesn't much matter whether they find it now or 5 months later. So when you say that there was no proximate cause, isn't the jury saying that there was no injury that related to this failure to identify it early?
No, Your Honor, because they could find negligence based on what the radiographic abnormalities looked like, even though they weren't cancerous. The issue of negligence is entirely separate from the proximate cause and injury issues. In other words, simply because it could very well have been that if he had reported it as potentially cancerous and they did a CT scan and it showed some evidence radiographically, they could have done a thoracotomy, they would have done a bronchoscopy, taken a tissue sample, and it could have been benign. So, in other words, it isn't a question of whether their finding of negligence means that it had to have been a finding that, indeed, those abnormalities were cancerous. It's a separate issue entirely. In this case, we wanted to prove that, indeed, they were cancerous because that meant that biopsy would have shown it.
Tell me how he's negligent if it wasn't that he misdiagnosed something on that first film.
Because the radiologist isn't making a tissue diagnosis based on the radiographic abnormalities on the x-ray. He's only following up on what they might be. So his differential diagnosis has to include the worst-case scenario, which in this case would be lung cancer. So he would recommend that there would be further diagnostic studies that would establish the diagnosis. It doesn't mean that it has to be the cancer. It may not very well be cancer. They may do the biopsy and it shows benign tissue, which in this case would have meant that Mr. Barrow's cancer would have gone undiagnosed until it was eventually diagnosed in May or June of 2002 based on symptoms of metastasis rather than a diagnostic test.
Let me approach it a slightly different way. It may be just a rehash of the same questions that Justice Berger asked. If Dr. Krasnow's deposition testimony had been admitted, that is, if you had prevailed on that issue, what would that have shown?
It would have shown that, indeed, it was cancerous and subsequent biopsy.
The left upper lobe was cancerous.
That is correct.
Okay.
It would have shown that the biopsy would have disclosed the cancer, and it would have established validity to the claim that it had been confined to the left upper lobe. The cancer, if it were not there, would suggest that it was diffuse and all over the place and probably untreatable as early as November of 2001. So that was a central medical causation finding that the jury needed to make it clear that on the second issue of metastasis, whether it would have made a difference, then clearly the plaintiffs were better able to prove that fact if indeed the conclusion reached by the jury was that the radiographic abnormalities were cancerous.
So at the time of the initial diagnosis by Dr. Abramowitz, there already was, or at least your proof would have shown that there already was cancer in the left upper lobe?
That is correct, and it's a critical finding.
And is there any other evidence besides the Krasnow testimony to that effect?
Yes, there were other witnesses for the plaintiff who testified to that effect.
So the jury could have found, based on that other evidence, that the left upper lobe was cancerous, correct?
They could have.
And they also could have found that Dr. Abramowitz was negligent in not picking that up in the initial diagnosis. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
If that's correct, then how do you explain the jury verdict here?
The jury verdict is explained by the plaintiffs in this manner. They concluded, based on arguments made by Dr. Bramowitz's counsel, that indeed there was no cancer in the left upper lobe, as Dr. Bramowitz was permitted to testify at trial, and Dr. Creech, another expert, came in and testified was the case. By accepting that finding, there could be no, it ended the discussion of proximate cause, because if there was no cancer in the left upper lobe, there never would have been a diagnosis anyway of this gentleman's cancer until it was too late to do anything about it.
So if the jury had found that there was cancer in the left upper lobe, then they could not have consistently also found that there was no proximate cause.
That is correct. In our view, with the exception that they could find that it may have metastasized already, even though it had originated and was present in the left upper lobe. And that was a disputed issue as well at trial.
Okay, but going back a moment, you explained the jury's verdict by saying that the jury found there was no cancer at the time of the first X-ray, right?
That is correct.
If they found there was no cancer at the time of the first X-ray, how could Dr. Abramowitz have been negligent?
Because the standard of care doesn't require that the radiologist be correct that the abnormalities are indeed cancerous. It only requires that if they appear to be, that the radiologist must act on that so a definitive diagnosis can be done. It's like a woman who goes in with a palpable mass and the family practitioner or gynecologist feeling that it's probably a cyst, but chooses not to refer to the surgeon, and it turns out it's cancerous. Well, the issue isn't whether it is or it isn't cancerous. The question is whether he should refer, and if he refers and it turns out to be a cyst, it that doesn't help on causation, but the doctor is still negligent for not making the referral.
Okay, so just bear with me here because I'm obviously not up to speed here. At the time of the first X-ray, the jury concluded, or at least you say, the jury must have concluded that there was no cancer or that it was already metastasized, but which seems inconsistent. But anyhow, let's assume the first X-ray, the jury is concluding that there was no cancer, but the jury is saying Dr. Abramowitz was negligent because even though there was no cancer, he should have recognized the possibility that it would be cancer, and he should have done whatever you do to follow up on the possibility that it was cancer.
Correct.
But because that was the negligence and there was actually no cancer, there's no injury as a result of that.
That is correct.
I'm with you now.
All right, fine. If I can go right to the cases which I believe are dispositive or controlling, one I think Your Honors hopefully will find is persuasive and reasonably controlling, it's this court's decision in Green versus Alfred I. DuPont. But there's the decision we're also relying on by the district court judge in the Vandenbrock case versus Vandenbrock versus Alfieri, and I think together those two cases provide the principles that are applicable that will hopefully allow the court to decide this case in favor of the Barrows. In the Green case, if it stands for something, it stands to practitioners like myself as substantiating the right of a litigant to introduce all relevant evidence, even if it's generated by an adverse party, particularly if it goes to evidence which goes to the very heart of the case and might influence the outcome of the trial. Might, not doesn't have to, but if it might, it's pretty important evidence. And if that's the case, artificial distinctions as to whether the evidence was generated by one party versus the other sort of lose their significance. Now, in Green,
what about the distinction as to whether it was a discovery deposition or a trial deposition?
That's true. And Green did not approach that issue. Vandenbrock did. The Vandenbrock versus Alfieri case were really facts very, very close to the case before the court today because it dealt with a discovery deposition. And what the district court judge did is he found that Rule 32 does not make any distinction between trial depositions and discovery depositions. In that case, as in this case, the plaintiffs reserved their right to introduce the testimony of adverse witnesses. In this case, as in that one, they indicated an intention to introduce the deposition testimony of witnesses at the trial. We did both of those things in the pretrial order prior to the original first trial, and it continued on because this case got postponed due to defense counsel's illness. In Vandenbrock, the court found that there was no distinction should be made with respect to whether it's discovery versus trial.
Mr. Sapa, just one last factual question. Was there any evidence that was presented to the jury by either side that the left lobe cancer that Dr. Krasno would have testified about had metastasized at the time of the original radiograph?
There was. It came through the testimony of Dr. Creech, one of the defense experts.
So the jury could have found that there was cancer and it had metastasized as of the time that Dr. Abramowitz made his initial.
That is correct. But in Green, I respectfully bring to the court's attention that the test isn't whether there was other evidence that could explain the jury's verdict. It's a question of whether the evidence was important enough on an issue which was so clearly dispositive, either proximate cause or on negligence, and the party was denied the opportunity to produce it. I see my light is on, and I'm going to take couple of minutes if I can, because I want to give Your Honors this analogy. If this had been an intersectional collision and the plaintiff and the defendant each had two good friends in the car and each testified or believed that they had the green light, and the plaintiff, his two buddies came in and said he had the green light, and we took depositions to find out what they were going to say at trial, and the defendant and his two buddies, the defendant and one of them said he had the green light. The defendant had the green light. But the other good friend said, no, it was red. Now, if that were a discovery deposition and this person, we couldn't get into trial, couldn't compel him by subpoena, to deny me or the plaintiff the opportunity to call a witness who sort of is within the control, who has enhanced credibility by the very fact that he has an association with another party, to deny that opportunity to introduce it is very material to the outcome of the case. I'll reserve what I have for...
Before you sit down, recognizing I'm in your rebuttal, but on the issue of whether the trial judge abused the judge's discretion by determining, in effect, that it was cumulative, because there were other witnesses that put it in issue, to distinguish it from a case where this expert witness who was barred would have been the only person putting in issue the issue that you're concerned about. Isn't it all significant that the trial judge makes the initial determination and we review it on abuse of discretion?
I don't think, Your Honor, that the proclamations in Green support that. I think, Your Honors, the decision in Green establishes the fact that you sparingly use which would sometimes be appropriate, grounds of cumulativeness when the testimony is that clearly probative, highly probative of the central issue in the case. And there really are two of them. It's going to be whether there was a deviation from standard of care and whether or not there's proximate cause. And this
goes right, so you would have us focus on the fact this wasn't a tangential issue.
Absolutely.
This went to the heart of the case.
That is correct.
So the weight to be given to discretion and barring on the basis of cumulative evidence would be less.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Dennis Ferry on behalf of the estate of Dr. Abramowitz. There's been a substitution filed. Dr. Abramowitz subsequently passed away post-trial. It doesn't reflect that in the caption to the briefs, but the substitution has been filed. Justice Berger, if I may, you asked the question of Mr. Zappa about standard of care, and Dr. Abramowitz could have been found negligent by failing to include in his X-ray report the potential for cancer. Not that it was cancerous, but the potential for cancer. So the breach of standard of care, as testified to by the various radiologists, were that he did not include that. All he included was old scarring, potential old TB, and the radiologists for plaintiff testified that's not enough. You also have to put in the potential of active cancer, a new cancer, and that's how the jury could conclude that he breached standard of care, whether or not there was cancer in that left upper lobe. If I can go back to the beginning of this case, plaintiff had identified four experts. Two radiologists, one from Richmond, Virginia, one from Johns Hopkins, two oncologists, the treating oncologist, and the chief of radiation oncology at Jefferson. There were four experts. I identified two experts initially, one, Dr. Creech, who was with Fox Chase, not at the time, but had been with Fox Chase for a while, and then was at Jeans Hospital in Philadelphia, and also Dr. Krasnow, who was with the VA in Washington. When the trial was scheduled initially, plaintiff filed a motion in limine. Dr. Krasnow was knocked out, if you will. The motion was granted. Dr. Krasnow's opinion was that the lung cancer had metastasized, and he based it on doubling time of lung adenocarcinoma. Judge Scott felt that that was not reliable under the circumstances, and he said that Dr. Krasnow could not testify to that Daubert-type challenge, and he granted it. So I was left with one expert, Dr. Creech. Now, I could have called Dr. Krasnow, but the crux of his opinion was that there was this doubling time and it was metastasized. So he really, when Judge Scott made that ruling, he took the underpinnings out of my expert, and I couldn't call him. Mr. Zappa wanted to...
Wait, let me stop you there.
Sure.
I assume that if Dr. Krasnow had decided that the cancer had already metastasized, by definition, it would mean that that X-ray showed cancer existed at the time of the original X-ray, right?
Yes.
Okay, and that was the point for which plaintiffs wanted to introduce his testimony, right?
Well, I presume. But, Your Honor, the cancer could have been either in the left upper lobe or it could have been somewhere else in the lung. This came out at trial, too. Dr. Creech, for example, testified it was not the left upper lobe. That was just scarring. But the PET scan had showed highly activated areas in the lower part of the lung, and it was more likely there than in the left upper lobe because of the PET scan, which is the latest technology that they use. It doesn't tell you whether something's cancer or not, but it tells you whether something in doctor's parlance is hot or not. And this area was hot. It wasn't hot up in the lobe, and that testimony was presented to the jury. So whether or not, so it really, part of the question the jury had to decide was whether was it left upper lobe or was it somewhere else in the lung as well. I called Dr. Creech. Plaintiff called his four experts. In addition to the negligence question, the proximate the causation question was always in the case from the very beginning, and Dr. Creech testified that, in his opinion, back in November of 01, I believe it was, that when the initial X-ray was taken and read by Dr. Abramowitz, that this was a stage 3B or 4, which means it's at the end. And it's too late to do anything about it. There's nothing, and he's not going to survive. He's not going to survive. So that was testified to by Dr. Creech. So the jury could easily have said, well, we accept what Dr. Creech says. He testified with regard to he had tremendous experience. He had, in fact, just retired, been at Fox Chase for a long time, gave those opinions, and also, when plaintiff's expert, Dr. Donitis, testified with regard to what his opinion was with regard to the stage of the cancer, when I cross-examined him, I said, Dr. Donitis, of course, his position had been on direct examination that this was a stage 1, and therefore it was confined, therefore could be treated. On cross-examination, I said, Dr. Donitis, you can't really tell us to a reasonable medical probability that this was a stage 1. And he said, that's true, I can't. And I said, you know what reasonable medical probability means, more likely than not. And he said, yes, I know what it means. So in addition to Dr. Creech, we have plaintiff's expert, chief of radiology, telling the jury that he can't say with reasonable medical probability that this was a stage 1 clearly treatable diagnosis. This was a change from his deposition, and this was a change from his direct examination. And I think it was, I think the case turned largely on that and largely on the testimony of Dr. Creech. With regard to Dr. Krasnow and whether or not his testimony would have made any difference, we do get into a discretion type of situation with Judge Scott. Plaintiff had four experts already. I had one. He had ruled Dr. Krasnow couldn't testify. And the part that plaintiff wanted to use, the part of Dr. Krasnow that plaintiffs wanted to use was the fact that Dr. Krasnow said that the cancer was in the left upper lobe. But that was not the focal point of his testimony. The focal point of his testimony was the doubling time.
And why does that make a difference?
Pardon me?
Why does that make a difference?
Well, I think when you have an I think it goes to the judge's discretion in whether or not to let that come in, because I think it makes a difference in the sense that, well, he's there espousing a theory in deposition about doubling time, and that's been knocked out. He hasn't really looked at the case from whether or not there's the cancer's in the left upper lobe or elsewhere in the lung, as the other physicians did, as Dr. Creech did. So I think Judge Scott was well within his discretion in saying you have four experts, you have one expert, because the case was continued because of my illness. And after that, after Dr. Krasnow was ruled not permitted to testify, I asked to bring in another expert, and I filed a motion with the court, and Judge Scott denied it and said, I'm leaving things where they were at the beginning of the first trial. I'm not going to let anything change. So it was 4-1. Krasnow wasn't on the block as far as testimony is concerned.
Arguably, it was 4-2. Didn't your client also testify?
Yes, Your Honor. If you count Dr. Abramo, it's 4-2. Yes. But as far as independent experts, it would have been 4-1. I think I would just like to mention, I didn't mention it in my brief, but I gave this case to Mr. Zappa this morning. I left him a voicemail earlier this morning. The Coleman case that this court decided in June of 2006, Coleman versus Price Waterhouse, goes into detail and delineates pretty much what abuse of discretion is and what the it appears that you took pains to spell out the various factors that the court needs to take into consideration in exercising that discretion. And I think based upon this case as well as the others I've cited, I don't think Judge Scott abused his discretion at all. I think plaintiff got a fundamentally fair chance to win their case. I think the jury accepted Dr. Creech, Creech's testimony, which could fully support the verdict on causation, and it was buttressed by the fact that plaintiff's own radiologist could not testify to a reasonable medical probability to the way they wanted him to. So I think clearly the jury's verdict is based on common sense and based on testimony that was presented to them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, if I may, there were no 4-1 witnesses here. The witnesses who testified for the plaintiff were Dr. Martin, the medical oncologist who treated this individual until his death. He testified that, indeed, he believed the radiographic abnormalities were cancerous. He also testified on the metastatic issue. He didn't believe it had metastasized in November. Dr. Donitis is the retained expert. He's the only retained expert who specifically testified on the metastasis issue and also on whether it originated there in the left upper lobe. The last one was a standard of care expert, Konerding, one of the radiologists who testified, who offered the opinion that he believed the radiographic abnormalities were also cancerous based on his view from radiology standpoint. So it wasn't 4, it was 3, one of whom was a treating doctor. On the other hand, the defense had Creech, Krasnow, and Dr. Abramowitz. And one of the issues I did not discuss in my opening, but it came in because of the comments of defense counsel, is that Dr. Abramowitz was a very viable expert. And one of the grounds that we say is justifying reversal here and a retrial on issues of causation and damages is this issue of Dr. Bramowitz offering the very opinions and elaborate opinions on medical causation where he had not been disclosed as an expert prior to trial. And that's a very important issue. But as to the decision in Green, it isn't a question of whether there's other evidence that might explain the verdict. It's a question of whether the evidence is that important going to the very heart of the case and whether it could have had an effect. And certainly all that criteria is met here. And it's even more so when you have a retained expert who doesn't measure up. So,
but your side made a motion to preclude Krasnow from testifying as an expert, right?
We absolutely did not, Your Honor.
How is it that the court threw him out as an expert?
The court did not throw Dr. Krasnow out. Our motion in limine was one opinion of three opinions or several opinions this expert was going to give. It was the opinion of metastasis based on doubling times. We didn't even object to him testifying on metastasis. It's just that he could not use the doubling time studies as the basis for his opinion because there had been previous decisions, one of which was Judge Scott's decision, saying that basis was unreliable. In all the respects, we expected him to testify, and they held out the belief he may be, in fact, testifying until shortly before the trial. So we set this case up clearly indicating we intended to introduce Krasnow's testimony on that issue when we took his discovery deposition. The questions I asked were clearly to establish that point without any question so I could introduce it later, either on cross or, if I had to, introducing his deposition testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.